welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Hey, everybody, this is the Josh Meister. Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. And I got a lot of people called in tonight. It looks like it's going to be a fun show. And at least for a little while, we've got Josh, a.k.a. Spivvy, from the Lost Flashbacks called in. How's everything going tonight?
It's great. Very, very tired over here, but I'm looking forward to your show.
Yeah, it's so funny that most of the people, it seems like, who call in live to the, or listen into the show are like East Coasters. I always feel so kind of silly, like I'm making people stay up like extra late. It's 1:30 there, and... I do have a few people. Mormon Gill says it's Pacific time here, so a few other people are in my time zone. But well, it was cool of you to join us, and hopefully you can stay around for a few minutes and share some of your insights into the episode. But
yeah.
So what did you think overall of the episode? How does it compare to the season premiere episode last week?
I actually liked it more. Than the premiere. I really thought this episode was great. To be honest, I'm a little bored with the whole Oceanic 6 storyline. You know they're going to get back to the island eventually. That it'll be difficult for them, but I just find myself not at all caring about really any of them, that storyline. I'm in love with almost everything that's going on the island.
Yeah.
With all of them. Like, it's just so exciting. We're finding out so much stuff, and it's all starting to come together.
Right. The interesting thing about this episode, like you say, is they didn't really even mention the Oceanic 6 hardly. It was all Desmond and Penny for the flash forwards and all island stuff for the rest of the episode. So that was kind of interesting. And of course, you know, we know they're going to have to get back to the Oceanic 6 very soon, because that's obviously an integral part of what's going on at the same time. With Locke wanting to get back, to get off the island, to get to those people and make sure that they all come back and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So let's see, just briefly here, I'm going to kind of run through things from the past few episodes. Last week, kind of because of the length of the show, I knew I was going to have a long podcast because there was 2 hours worth of show to cover. So I didn't really get into the pop-ups that they had for the season 4 finale. I only have a couple of notes on that. But one thing I thought was interesting is that Ben, he looked up and he said something to indicate that Jacob wanted him to leave the island. He said something like... I hope you're happy now, Jacob, or something like that, when he was turning the frozen donkey wheel. And the pop-up said something to that effect, that Ben knew that Jacob wanted him to leave the island.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see. When Kate was having, when she kind of woke up and there was the phone call and it was kind of an unintelligible voice, and then she goes into Aaron's room, and Claire is there. The voice on the phone said to Kate, this is according to the pop-up, the island needs you. And by the way, this is played in reverse. It said, the island needs you. You have to go back before it's too late. And then, interestingly, when Kate then goes into Aaron's room, and Claire is there, Claire says, don't bring him back, Kate. Don't you dare bring him back. So, in other words, don't bring Aaron back to the island. So at first, thought, it seems like, wait, that's really weird, because the phone call seems to contradict what Claire is saying. The phone call says the island needs you, you have to go back, and then Claire says, don't bring him back, don't you dare bring him back.
That was both in like a dream, too, so it's...
Right, exactly. And so maybe a possible kind of... Maybe they're not necessarily conflicting, because... even though both of these happened during Kate's same dream or vision, they seem to give conflicting influences, but maybe not. Maybe it's that the island just wants Kate to go back, but not Aaron. Now, that seems to be different from what we've heard elsewhere. It seems that the island wants everybody back, or almost everybody, at least the Oceanic Six, is kind of what we've been led to believe up to this point. And so it's really strange that if that's how we're supposed to interpret this, that the island wants Kate to come back, but not Aaron. That doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, but it's kind of an interesting idea.
It may want to avoid him if he's somehow, you know, special like others we know are, and you know, maybe he's a danger to the island. You know, the island's like, you know, I don't want that guy here. He'll be trouble.
Right. Let's see here. What's up next? Okay. Okay. The next thing that I've got in my notes is that they mentioned that after Ben turned the frozen donkey wheel, that he showed up in the desert wearing that same jacket 11 months later. So that kind of, it seems to indicate the timeline there of what happened with, you know, after Ben made this leap off of the island, it seems, according to that pop-up, that he wound up 11 months in the future. When he wound up in the desert. So that gives us a little bit more concrete timeline. Okay, let me take a look here. So that's all the notes that I had from the season 4 finale pop-up recap or review episode. You know, my chat is all weird right now.
Oh, no.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. My TalkShoe chat got kind of messed up for a second there. Anyway, so... So the season 5 premiere, here are some of the notes that I took while watching the episode again, while watching it with the pop-up. So some of these are pop-up things and some are just other observances. Let's see. Ana Lucia's comment, "What if I were real?" seems to indicate that she's in Hurley's imagination, that she's not real. But perhaps it could also mean that she's a manifestation of the island and therefore not real. But, you know, it seems like she would have said, if she was like a ghost or something, it seems like she wouldn't have said that she wasn't real. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because a ghost is real. But, however, then Ana Lucia says, when she's walking away from the car, Libby says hi. And that sort of seems to contradict the idea that she's in his imagination or a manifestation of the island, because she can communicate with somebody else who's dead and then relay that to Hurley. So that sort of hints that Ana Lucia and Libby are both ghosts. So, again, kind of weird, seemingly contradictory statements. But so Ana Lucia says, "What if I were real?" which seems to indicate she's imaginary. But then she says, Libby says hi, which seems to indicate that, you know, she's really dead to Ana Lucia and has talked to Libby. So it's kind of weird. Here's a theory that I think I've heard elsewhere, but I kind of wrote this down when I was watching the episode again. Sun maybe was the one who sent the lawyers to Kate's house to get her out of the house and in a position where she couldn't refuse to meet with Sun. You know, so when Sun called her up, Kate would have nowhere else to go, but yeah, of course I'll come meet you. And if that's the case, it would be more, you know, Kate might be more likely to do whatever Sun is about to ask her to do. We can kind of guess that, you know, Kate is not just there for no reason. I mean, Sun came to L.A. just to talk to Kate in reality. So,
you know, I'm hoping with that the lawyers is a more interesting story than it's like Ben or Widmore or something like. I'm really hoping it's something that's a little more mysterious, or, you know, I mean, if it's Ben and it's just like to put her in a position where he would have leverage over her, then it's a little disappointing, to be honest. Or if it's,
yeah,
you know, Widmore to scare her or something, it's like, I don't know, it's a little too, I guess, simple, but, you know, I would be disappointed if it was something that's just, a, you know, cut and dry like that.
Right. So there's that idea. I think I heard that on Lost Cast, that someone had thrown around that idea that Sun sent the lawyers.
I like that. I definitely like that, but it's Sun.
Yeah. Yeah. Jack says to Ben, "He's dead, isn't he?" referring to John Locke, and Ben doesn't answer the question. And I don't know if I mentioned that last week. I couldn't remember if I had talked about that or not. But that was kind of interesting. And, of course, you know, it certainly leads us to believe that once, you know, Locke gets back to the island, that he'll be alive again. I think we may have mentioned that last week, but I couldn't remember for sure. I just wanted to throw that out there. The pop-ups hinted that Saeed and Hurley are in danger from Charles Widmore, who is in... It doesn't say Charles Widmore, but it says that Saeed and Hurley are in danger from someone who will do anything to get information about the island, which I can't imagine that being anybody other than Charles Widmore that they're talking about. So Saeed and Hurley apparently are in danger because Charles Widmore is sending somebody after them. The flaming arrows. I don't know if we mentioned, really talked much about the origin of the flaming arrows last week. But how far back in time do you think flaming arrows would be from? I mean, who in the world uses flaming arrows for a weapon? That seems something like maybe island natives or something might do. It just seems sort of weird. It doesn't quite seem to fit. It seems like it's kind of out of place with, like, the U.S. Army or whoever. I don't remember for sure.
For me, it definitely seemed like something more to scare them than to just kill them. Because if you just wanted to kill them, they would just charge them with, like, the machine guns that they had and shot them instead of shooting a barrage of fiery arrows. Or, like you're saying, it was just a much more primitive culture. And the whole discussion about were the same people fire those arrows that were... You know, and in this episode, the U.S. military uniformed people.
Yeah.
Which are the others.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. I kind of want to think that they're island natives. Kate Jack in the chat points out that Rousseau had arrows. And so that's, you know, that could be a possibility there. Let's see.
We see the others with them, too, but I mean... It just seems so odd that they would shoot them with all those arrows and then kind of be hiding in the woods with guns. Like, just
yeah,
if they wanted to kill them, just charge them with their guns. There are not that many of them.
Right. Missing Toe in the chat says, flaming arrows, maybe they are abiding by Jacob's law, no technology. But then again, the others are using guns, too, so I don't know. But that's a good point. The pop-ups, I noticed, didn't make a big deal about how old Sun's picture of Ji Yeon is. I thought that was really, you know, strange, and so many other people have commented about that since the episode aired last week, how, you know, this is basically a newborn picture of Ji Yeon and that Sun is showing to Kate. Kate doesn't, like, bat an eye and say, hey, you know, isn't she a lot older than that by now?
Yeah, Ji Yeon should be about a year younger than Aaron, right?
Right.
Or less. I mean,
right. So that was really weird, and it's funny that didn't come up on. Maybe it'll come up on the official Lost podcast. I don't know, but that was kind of a weird thing, and they didn't really, like I said, they didn't make a big deal about it in the pop-up, which I kind of expected them to. So I don't know if that was just a prop error or if there's really something going on there. Maybe there is something going on and they don't want us to know yet. I don't know. Who knows? Let's see here. More McGill says, maybe the whole reason that they used arrows was because it's funnier with Frogert saying, we can't make fire, and then bursting into flames. Or maybe they just don't have a lot of bullets. I don't know. let's see here. Oh, another thing from the Sun and Kate conversation. Sun tells Kate, you need to take care of them, meaning the lawyers. And she asks Kate, wouldn't you do anything to make sure that she and Aaron could stay together? And Kate kind of gets this look like, I can't believe you just said that. She says, what kind of a person do you think I am? And Sun seems to have been telling Kate to kill the lawyers if necessary. That was my take. I don't know if anyone else got that out of the episode, but watching it again, it sure seemed like Sun was telling Kate, you have to do whatever is necessary, kill the lawyers if you need to. And so that would sort of seem to indicate that perhaps Sun didn't send the lawyers. But why would Sun want Kate to kill the lawyers? That's weird. Unless maybe the lawyers work for Ben, and she knows that because she hates Ben and wants him dead. So, I don't know. The missing show in the chat says that's what I thought Sun was insinuating too.
Sun is actually the only one of the Oceanic Six whose story I'm interested in, because she just seems like she's gone down a road of just evil, and it just makes me very happy. Like, she just seems like she just wants revenge. Like, she doesn't care about getting back to the island. She doesn't care about any of the other Oceanic Six. She just wants to get the revenge for Jin dying and go on with her life. And I love the way she talks to Kate, where she was like, you know, she's like, I don't blame you for his death.
Right.
How you left. And then she goes, so how's Jack?
Right,
I know. It's just so great how she just jabs at her and has this crazy look in her eye all the time. And
yeah.
She's gone from like this dainty housewife that we thought she was to like this badass who everyone should be afraid of, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we'll get into Charles Widmore later. I think it's interesting that she partnered with Charles Widmore though.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly is going on there, but that's kind of an interesting partnership there, I guess if you want to call it that. Let's see, another thing from the episode, there was something that stabbed Sawyer's toe. I didn't mention this because it seemed sort of insignificant at the time, but when I was listening to Lost Cast, they discussed this crazy theory that somebody had, and I wish I'd remembered who the original source was, but by the way, this thing that stabbed Sawyer's toe, when I was watching the episode again, you know, today, it looked like it was something maybe hand-carved or, you know, something like that. It definitely sort of had a design of some kind on it. It didn't look like just a regular, you know, splinter, you know, piece of a tree branch or something like that that got stuck in his toe. And so this crazy theory was that maybe Sawyer loses his toe due to an infection or something. He gets stuck back in time for a while, you know, during maybe during the time when the island natives are, you know, were living and shooting arrows and flaming arrows and whatnot. So he gets stuck back in time for a while, and the island natives make a four-toed statue of Sawyer.
That would be perfect.
it was such a crazy theory, but I don't know. But like, after watching the episode again, I kind of like that theory.
If they don't do that, someone has to make a fan fiction of that, because that's just too too perfect to not go for.
It's awesome.
Sawyer's the island god.
Right. Kate Jack says he does look like God with his long hair, and Diesel says like Jesus. Yeah. So. Yeah, interesting. Okay, moving on. Jones, the military guy who captured Sawyer and Juliet, says, what are you doing on our island? And so I wrote, and again, this was before I watched this week's episode, whoever they are, they think it's their island. And, of course, we find out a little bit later in today's episode what happened with that. This is not exactly related to the show, but still kind of cool. I noticed there was an advertising spot during the recap episode where Malcolm David Kelly, the actor who plays Walt, was in a Buffalo Chicken Wing commercial. I thought, oh my gosh, that's such a clever advertising spot. That was so cool.
Yeah, we were talking about that too, and how we all hope that, you know, in a show, Hurley or someone will be eating that brand of Buffalo Chicken Wings, and just that it's a super, super clever ABC spot for some kind of to bring just have some fun and put Walt in it and just make every Lost fan want to buy whatever brand of chicken that was.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll give a shout out to the brand. It was Tyson was the brand name, and brilliant, clever marketing. That was wonderful. Way to go, marketing team. No, that's real. That's a real brand. They really do make the chicken. At least I assume they really make that chicken. I know it's a real brand. So,
yeah.
Let's see here. Okay. So there was another pop-up, that mentioned that the uniforms resemble those worn by members of the U.S. Army in the 1950s. Of course, that doesn't surprise us anymore after seeing the current episode, but here's another thought that I had about this. What about the people, Locke killed at least one of them. we pulled the knife out of the back and all that, you know, dramatic stuff last week. He killed them in the past. How will that affect the future, or will it?
If we believe Daniel's rules of time travel, then that's how it happened always.
Right.
And, you know, so Locke, you know, it doesn't create a paradox because Locke went back there and did it anyway. We really have to learn a lot more about these rules because...
Well, yeah, see, it gets
mixed up every now and then.
Right. Every fictional story about time travel has its own set of rules, and it seems like at times Lost even breaks its own rules. And
yeah.
So, I don't know. Whatever.
The whole thing
anyway.
With Desmond, with Daniel telling him to go see his mom, and then he wakes up and he has, like, a new memory.
Exactly.
It's trouble that they're going to run into just because time travel is such a difficult thing to do without those because it's insane.
Well, I thought it was weird last week, and then Penny even, like, you know, pointed this out even more, you know, really pushing it out there in case you didn't already notice how insane this is, that Desmond suddenly, at some random arbitrary point in the future, all of a sudden this memory pops into his head. Why at that particular moment? Why not, you know, before Desmond left the island? Why, you know, that didn't make any sense, like, in the whole context of, you know, whatever you change in the past has always been changed. That wasn't the case with Desmond. So, again, they're kind of breaking their own rules. But anyway, that's kind of what happens when you mess around with time travel in a fiction show. So, anyway, moving on.
There are times when you just have to say it's a TV show and they have to move the story along somehow.
Yeah. Diesel actually has an interesting thought. Maybe the rules don't apply to Desmond, Diesel929 in the chat. That's a great idea. I could maybe see that. I don't know, but at the same time, I mean, you've got other things like, you know, when Daniel was sending the consciousness of the rats back in time and so forth. I mean, that was sending a consciousness back in time, which is the same kind of thing that has happened to Desmond. And yet, now on the island, we're actually seeing people jumping through time. So that's very different from just their consciousness.
I mean, I always wonder, like, he sent the mouse, the rat back in time, and it knew the maze because he was going to teach it the maze later. But what if he decided to not teach it the maze? Like, what would happen?
That whole scene contradicts itself because the rat obviously never makes it to that point in the future where it would learn the maze because it was dead by then.
I mean,
so
it's a very... But time travel. They're doing it better than most shows, though. Much better than most shows. So I give them a lot of credit for that. And they seem to be having a lot of fun with it, too. So.
Sure. Okay. Mormon Gill says, Faraday told Desmond he was special, i.e. rules don't apply. Okay. Well, moving on. A pop-up said, the old machines in the room with Miss Hawking resemble those used by the Dharma Initiative on the island. Other people have kind of pointed that out, so I thought that was worth mentioning. That it was kind of seeming to point out that there's a connection between, maybe, the Dharma Initiative and Miss Hawking, and of course, you know, Ms. Hawking is working with Ben too, so that all is kind of interesting how maybe there's some Dharma connections with Ms. Hawking there too. And then a pop-up says that her first name is Eloise. They call her Eloise Hawking. And who else do we know whose name was Eloise on Lost? Daniel Faraday's rat, right?
Wow. That'd be awesome. So he named it after his mom?
He named his rat after his mom. That's kind of sad. I mean, maybe he really loves the rat. I don't know. Anyway, so that is, I think, pretty... I mean, if we weren't already convinced that Ms. Hawking is Daniel Faraday's mom after watching that scene, after seeing this pop-up and her name is Eloise, I don't see how anybody could think that that is not Daniel Faraday's mom at this point. So... let's see, here's some other notes on the season 5 premiere from LostCast. I've got a few little notes written down. Let's see. And by the way, anybody who's called into the chat, there are a couple of people called in who are not who are still muted. If you would like to speak, then, you know, let me know. I'll definitely unmute you. I know some people like to call in and not be unmuted. So just let me know if you want me to unmute you so you can join the conversation. So these are notes from Lostcasts. They said, Miles seems to have found the dead boar because of his psychic ability to communicate with the dead. I thought that was a good point. Daniel Faraday in the cave at the beginning of season 5, episode 1, could have been Dan from the present, or rather the very near future, like in an upcoming episode, who went to that area of the island to investigate. I don't know if they outright said that on the show, but at least that's something I wrote in my notes after listening to their show or during the show. So I thought that was kind of a good point. I mean, it's obviously not a young Daniel Faraday. I don't think he probably was even born yet maybe it was a baby when they were just doing that research on the island and digging in the caves and whatnot. So it makes a lot of sense that in a future episode of the season, perhaps we'll see Daniel go back to that particular point in time and go to that cave. I think that would be really cool to kind of bring it all together that way. Let's see. They also mentioned that in a season 3 DVD extra, Damon Lindelof said that Ms. Hawking was like a temporal policeman, which in other words means a time cop. And I looked up the rest of the quote on Lostpedia, and the full quote is that Ms. Hawking, quote, is a temporal policeman in place to make sure every person gets to the island that it's supposed to, end quote. So, so that's kind of an interesting quote from Damon Lindelof there. She's a temporal policeman in place to make sure every person gets to the island that it's supposed to. And so it sounds like in this case, you know, where she's hanging out with Ben, gets back to the island that it's supposed to, is kind of the connection there. So she's still doing her job, the same job that, you know, she was doing with Desmond in season 3. Okay, so that's it for my recap notes. So now getting into this week's episode, which was called Jughead, season 5, episode 3. And let's see. So we start out with a flash forward. Penny's having a baby. It's a boy. We go to a flash forward that's still further in the future. And Desmond is talking to his boy. The boy seems to be about age 2 or so. And he's talking with Penny. And Penny kind of is arguing with him because, you know, Penny knows that, you know, Desmond is potentially putting their lives at risk by going back to their homeland, where he might be spotted by somebody who works for Charles Widmore. And Desmond says that we're here because of Daniel Faraday. He's basically saying, I've got to do this for Daniel Faraday. We're back on the island, and I'm kind of skipping through some of the scenes. I like to focus on the things that seem to be the most plot relevant, or, you know, kind of advance the storyline or add to the mystery. And instead of saying, last week I was kind of, I don't know, it was weird kind of going by my normal outline where I write flash forward or flashback or present. And I couldn't really write presence last week. It didn't really make a lot of sense because they're jumping through time on the island. So I'm just going to say flash forward and island this time around. So back on the island, Charlotte's symptoms are getting worse. Some of the meat socks, as they call them on the official podcast, the red shirts, the people who don't matter, get blown up in a landmine. Let's see. Miles, Dan, and Charlotte get captured by the army. Miles says that that Dan is in charge, and an army woman, who apparently was the leader of that little group, says to Dan, "You just couldn't stay away, could you?" As if she knows him. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And, of course, later in the episode, we don't get any sense that she knew Daniel, like, previously. But that was kind of an interesting line because it almost seemed to imply that they had some sort of connection, as though she knew him or knew who he was. Maybe she was just making an assumption about who he was connected with. But that was kind of an interesting line. You just couldn't stay away, could you? Let's see. The two, kind of a little bit later, another scene, the two army men who were captured by Locke and Juliet and Sawyer are speaking Latin to each other. Juliet knows the language, too. She says that they're others, and because all others learn Latin. It's Others 101, she tells to Sawyer later. Another scene, Miles says that they just walked over a fresh grave. He said, I think he said that they were all people from the U.S. Army. He said that three of them were shot. One of them died of radiation poisoning. And so we find out a little bit later what the radiation poisoning is all about with the the bomb on the hydrogen bomb that says Jughead on the side of it. The Army is holding the freighter folk captive, you know, Dan and Charlotte and Miles. They take them to their leader, which turns out to be Richard Alpert. And he looks the same age as we've always seen him, which really should be no surprise to anybody by now who's seen Richard Alpert all throughout time in flash forwards and flashbacks. I guess maybe not flash forwards yet, but in flashbacks anyway. Let's see. In a flash forward, Desmond goes to find Faraday's mom. Nobody by the name Faraday is in the computer is ever having worked there, which is interesting. Des finds Faraday's old room. There's a fumigation sticker and a lock or something on it. He breaks in. He finds a photograph of Faraday with a blonde woman, so he knows that, you know, he's not just crazy, that Faraday really worked there and all that. And a janitor or somebody comes in and says to Desmond regarding Faraday's name being removed from the records, can you blame him? I mean, after what he'd done to that poor girl. And so, of course, later in the episode, we find out who that poor girl is. It was somebody that I guess Daniel had maybe been experimenting with, doing some sort of time experimentation, and she gets kind of put into this sort of comatose state where her mind is jumping back and forth. But interestingly enough, she doesn't die. We find out later in the episode that she's still alive, which is kind of interesting, because most of the people, it seems like, die when they get to that point where their mind is jumping back and forth through time too much. So I don't know if that's because because if she had a constant, then she wouldn't be having the weird mind trippy thing. So I don't know what the explanation is there, but somehow she's still alive, even though her mind is doing this skipping back and forth. In fact, maybe it could have something to do with later in the episode we find out that apparently Charles Widmore was the one funding her care. So maybe Widmore, I don't know, had some technology that was able to keep her alive, even though her mind is jumping. So I don't know. Let's see here. I'm just kind of looking through the notes, you know, or comments from people on the chat to see if I missed anything that I want to point out. Natalie in Seattle says, my theory is that Sawyer will call that military chick G.I. Jane or Private Benjamin. More McGill says, wonder what happened to the oceanic passengers that joined the others, like the stewardess and the two kids. They'll probably get back to that. I think right now, because they're jumping kind of back in time quite a bit, they're, you know, this is well before, right now on the island, this is well before the plane has crashed, of course. And so they may get back into that plot at some point in the future. I've kind of wondered about that recently too. Like we haven't seen Cindy in a long time since season 3, right? And Cindy and the kids.
Yeah, I think one of the big questions though is why is this small select group the ones that are jumping? Like, none of the others are jumping. You know, Cindy and the kids are not jumping with them. Why were these people singled out? And it's not only the people from the plane. You know, Juliet's going with them, and Daniel, and all of them. Right. Seems like there's a group of people, kind of the main characters.
Okay.
That are on the island. And
here's my theory on that. I think the reason for that is because they were the ones who were on the island when the island got moved. When Ben moved the island, it caused some weird thing to happen where now the people who were on the island at that time, who were there at that time, are the ones skipping around in time. Now, of course, you know, I don't know. I guess at the same time, your point is still valid there, because what about Richard Alpert, who was on the island presumably at that time, and Cindy and the kids? So maybe they're skipping around somewhere else on the island that we just don't know about. I don't know.
It's cool. It's definitely this is a good mystery.
Yeah, that's what Mormigil said in the chat. Same thing. Cindy and the kids may be jumping, but just are on their own. That's Yeah, that's. I could see that. It's. I don't know. It's weird, and maybe we'll never know because it's not necessarily critical to the plot. But that would be kind of funny if all of a sudden Cindy showed up. She's been jumping around the island too through time. So maybe she's the one who got out the fiery arrows and shot them at Neil Frogert. Maybe she's always hated Frogert and just wanted some way to get back at him. I don't know.
Yeah, with that day she did everybody a favor because she was getting on everybody's nerves and acting crazy.
Right. Okay. Anyway, getting back to reality and the show. Or, well, not that the show is reality, but anyway, whatever I'm trying to say. Okay. So back on the island, Dan says he knows there's a hydrogen bomb and that it's unstable and he needs to try and disable it. And Richard Alpert says, well, how do I know that I can trust you and that you're not just here on a suicide mission to go detonate it and kill us all? And Dan says that he's in love with Charlotte. So it's the first time that he's directly said that. I mean, it's kind of been obvious for a while, but he says it out loud and right in front of her. So it's kind of sweet and touching. One of the others, in another scene a little bit later, one of the others still back on the island that was taken captive by Juliet's group trusts Juliet when she asks about Richard Alpert in Latin. So he starts to say, well, the camp is east from here, but then Jones, the other who's with them, kills the guy who started to talk to Juliet, and takes off. And Sawyer tells John to shoot, but John doesn't shoot. Sawyer asks, why? You know, what's your problem? And John says, because he's one of my people. And so my take on that is, you know, John, he's taking his role as a leader of the others. He later tells Richard in this episode, I'm your leader. You told me so.
With that, I was surprised Sawyer let him off so lightly. I mean, he basically committed treason the way, you know, Sawyer would look at it. I mean, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to shoot one of the others that would have killed us in an instant. He's one of my people.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
I know.
Like,
I was thinking
Sawyer was just like, oh. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't show so really much of Sawyer's reaction. That's just kind of where the scene ends, and they cut to commercial, I think, there. But, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, they've got to, like, show Sawyer's reaction to that, because he's going to be pretty ticked off. If he's like, wait, what? You're one of the others now? What's wrong with you, John, you crazy weirdo? So, flash forward, Des looks for Teresa Spencer, meets Abigail Spencer. He's looking for Teresa Spencer. That's the woman that Dan apparently had been experimenting on or something. He meets Abigail, who is the sister, and Abigail says that Widmore funded Daniel Faraday's research, and that when Daniel's experiments went awry, Widmore took full responsibility, and that's why Teresa is being taken care of. She's the one whose mind is jumping through time still. Let's see. Big O is in the chat, and he just put a link to an image. Let me pull that up here. And it's not loading. Okay. Maybe I'm just having problems with my connection here. Nope, sorry, it's not loading. I just tried it again. Well, anyway, I guess Big O's got a photograph of somebody. And who isn't identifiable or something. Can you explain, Big O? Can you just call in? Why don't you just call in and explain what you're doing, what you're talking about? All right. Well, for the moment, I guess I'll just kind of move on. Oh, he says he can't call in right now. All right. Well, oh, he says it's a picture of the girl tonight with the gun. Okay, which is Ellie. Anyway, we're actually going to get to that in a little bit. We're going to talk about who Ellie is. Ah, here we go. The picture's starting to load. All right. So while that's loading, let's see. Back on the island, Richard says that he answers to someone, and I guess we can assume that he's referring to Jacob there. In another scene, Juliet says, to Locke, they're kind of having a conversation about Richard Alpert, and Juliet says, Richard's always been here, And, of course, the question there is, how long is always? Does she mean as long as the island has been around? And if so, how long has the island been around? But so she says, Richard's always been here. Locke says, how old is he? And Juliet just says, old. So, really helpful, Juliet. Thanks a lot. See, Daniel tries to figure out how to disable the bomb. And the bomb says Jughead on the side, which is where the name of the episode comes in. And, of course, Jughead is an old comic character.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's necessarily any significance. I don't know. What do you think, Josh Spivey? Do you think do you think that there's some sort of connection? I don't know. They mentioned it briefly on Lostcast in the spoiler section last week that the episode was going to be called Jughead, and talked a little bit about, you know, who that character was. But I don't really know what kind of connection or what meaning it has in any way to the show. Okay. So, Big O says, let's see, he thinks that Ellie is Locke's mom. That's
wow.
An interesting theory. Okay, we're going to have to get back to that. I don't believe it, because I'll definitely put a link to this picture in my show notes, because I want people to take a look at this too and weigh in on what they think. I think we've got two different actresses here. And I'm like 90% sure of that, but they do look similar. I could see that. And of course, there's always the possibility that maybe they couldn't get that same actress again, so they got somebody else. But I think it's a different actress. But that's an interesting idea, that maybe, you know, Locke's mom. We saw her in season 4, episode 2, as pointed out in this comparison shot. And in this episode, season 5, episode 3, we see Ellie on the island, and there are some similarities, I guess, in the way that they look. I don't think it's the same person, but we'll get to my theory, and I think a lot of people share the same theory on who Ellie really is a little bit later in the episode. Let's see here. And Donna War in the chat gives another screenshot of Locke's mom. Okay. Big O says, I don't think that theory fits, but I went back and watched episode 411, not 4-2. 411, and I'm telling you, man, they look the same to me. That's what it says. Okay. So getting back to, I guess the next thing in order on my notes is the flash forward. And Diesel, by the way, looked up the actresses' names, and they're definitely two separate actresses. Holland Roden played young Emily Locke, and Alexandra Krosny played Ellie in this episode. They're different actresses, but that is a good point. I mean, Big O's got a point there, that their names are Emily and Ellie, so, you know, I could kind of see that, but I still think that the theory that I'm going to share later is more likely. Okay, so flash forward, Desmond barges in on Charles Widmore, and I'm like, what are you doing? Are you kidding me? Like, he told Penny that he would buy low, he wasn't going to, you know, get in a confrontation with Charles Widmore's people, and here he's, like, busting into Charles Widmore's office. I'm like, okay, I don't know what Des is thinking, but surprisingly, Widmore is very cooperative, and he says that he knows where Faraday's mother is. He tells Desmond that she's in Los Angeles and writes down an address for Desmond. And I'm like, I don't get it. Like, why in the world would Charles Widmore be cooperating with Desmond other than to maybe in hopes that he can see his daughter, who he hasn't seen in 3 years?
Also, he wants Penny far away from Ben. So maybe he thinks, you know, because Ben is threatened to kill her now that, you know, since Kimi killed Alex, but
that's true.
That might be one thing. He just wants to, you know, take this and then go back onto the ocean and never come back.
Well, but the problem with Charles Widmore giving Desmond the LA address and then saying to Desmond, you know, make sure to keep Penny out of this. You know, this is an old battle or whatever. It's not her thing to be involved with. Keep her safe. And, of course, I was thinking to myself, well, and yet you're giving Desmond the address, so you know that he's going to go there. And, of course, it would make sense that, well, I don't know, maybe Charles Widmore doesn't know that Miss Hawking, Eloise Hawking, is working with Ben at this point. Maybe he doesn't know there's a connection there, because obviously he is Daniel Faraday's employer. Charles Widmore is Daniel Faraday's employer. So maybe he doesn't realize that there's some sort of a connection there. Okay, so the next thing I've got in my notes is that Widmore wants Desmond to keep his daughter out of this, says, wherever you were hiding, go back there. Okay, back on the island, Richard doesn't know who John Locke is yet, but John says, Jacob sent me, and so Richard trusts him. In the meantime, Jones, as his name says on his shirt, is holding a gun to the back of Locke, and Jones says he doesn't trust Locke. Richard has to force him to put his gun down, and Richard calls him Widmore. In spite of the name that's on his shirt, he calls him Widmore, and that's weird. Why the heck is Widmore wearing a shirt that says Jones anyway?
Well, I think what happened, and from my understanding of the episode, is that the U.S. military was there, and the others attacked them and then took over all their stuff, just like they did to Dharma.
Okay.
I guess
okay.
They're just randomly wearing. I don't know why he just wouldn't take the name tag off, but since they're, but I think they're just randomly wearing army uniforms. But
okay. Well, okay, that makes a little bit more sense then. Ah, here we go. Okay, Big O's screen cap is loading a lot faster now. He put it up as a JPEG, smaller file. So, all right. Anyway, so we'll get back into the theory about Ellie and Emily Locke and all that stuff in a little bit. Let's see. Anything else in the chat here? The Missing Toe says, if I'm on the island in 1954, I'm saying Jacob told me I'm supposed to hook up with Ellie.
Wow.
Okay. let's see. Dano at Large looked at Big O's screen cap and says the nose and chin are different in the photo. Let's see. All right. So getting back to my notes, what do I have next here? So Richard says he doesn't know who John Locke is. John says, Jacob sent me. Jones, we find out Jones' real name is Widmore. And John turns to the man and says, Charles Widmore? And Widmore says, what's it to you? And John's like, nothing. Nice to meet you. I know who you are, you little rascal. So this is how Charles Widmore became acquainted with the islands. Charles Widmore was an other. Wow. So that's
one of my favorite reveals, I think, ever.
I mean, how weird is that? Okay, so now the two guys that are fighting over the island right now, neither one of them is originally, from the island. Charles Widmore, I don't know. I guess if he's an other and he stole that army uniform, which, that makes good sense, then maybe he's an other who grew up on the island. I don't know. I guess I could see that. But at the same time, I mean, here he's obviously defected from the others now. and Ben, on the other hand, he was born off the island and became somehow, I don't know, he became a leader to the others, I guess because he could see dead people or whatever, and so therefore he could see Jacob. But, that's just a question, just real quick before I forget this. How was Richard Alpert communicating with Jacob? Because I thought the whole thing with hiring Ben and making him their leader was that Ben could see dead people and so he could talk to Jacob and get information from Jacob, right? And
I don't know.
So Richard Alpert somehow apparently was able, I'm assuming, was able to communicate with Jacob, because obviously Jacob is his leader at this point too, otherwise he wouldn't have trusted John Locke when he said that. So how was Richard Alpert communicating with Jacob before? I'll expand on that probably a little bit in my notes on the blog. But sorry. Go ahead with what you were going to say, Stevie.
One cool thing about that is what you were saying about the relationship between Widmore and Ben is when Ben goes to see him at the end of, I think it's a Shape of Things to Come. Widmore says to Ben, "Everything you have, you took from me."
Right.
And, you know, maybe Widmore rises to become kind of the leader of the others at some point. You know,
right.
And Ben comes and, you know, I mean, it's, and he, you know, something happens when, while Ben is there and kind of takes away the leadership role from him. And,
right.
You know, or some kind of a, in, like a war that they have. I mean, it's, Widmore,
well,
definitely seemed to think that Ben had taken everything from him, or everything that he was on the island kind of had been his at one point.
Right. So I that's curious to me, because here Widmore on the island in 1954 is, you know, just some whatever. He's just some other guy. He's not even,
yeah,
you know, he doesn't even want to listen to what Richard Alpert has to say, who's, you know, been on the island forever apparently. And so I don't get how some snotty, you know, kid like Widmore ends up becoming a leader of the others, if that's what indeed happened, and then later left the island and Ben took over. You know, I don't know how he could become the leader, but I guess, you know, that's all speculation at this point, how that might have happened. Interesting, though, that Widmore was one of the others, and yeah, and apparently possibly even a leader if you go back to that Widmore line. That's a good observation. All right. Big O's taking off. Thanks for listening in, Big O. We'll have to talk about that theory a little bit later. All right. So what have I got next in my notes here? The flash forward. First of all, let's see. Donna Worth says, "I have a dumb theory that Ben's mom is really on the island at some point in time, too. And that's how he saw her." Ooh, interesting theory. I like that. Here, I'm going to copy that down so I can put that in my notes and credit you, of course. All right, so flash forward. Dev returns to Penny, and so he goes back to Penny. Penny's waiting on their boat or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, come on, Desmond. Think, use your head here. How does he know? He's wearing the same clothes as when he walked out of Widmore's office. How does he know that Widmore didn't send somebody to follow him? Come on. On the other hand, you know, of course, Widmore knows that Desmond is probably going to be going to that address in Los Angeles, so I guess it wouldn't be too hard to track him down anyway. But Desmond's son, we find out, is named Charlie, which is really cool. I mean, it's kind of obviously a nod to Desmond's good friend Charlie, who died to save the people on the island. But at the same time, I kind of thought it was funny that Penny's father's name is Charles. Charlie is a derivative of Charles. So did they actually,
yep,
name the baby Charles and call him Charlie? I can't imagine that would be the case. But anyway. So Penny says that she and Charlie will go with Desmond to L.A., which is exactly what Widmore told, what Charles Widmore told Desmond not to let happen. So back on the island, this is kind of the wrapping up scenes of the episode. Richard and John are having a conversation. Richard says that it's 1954, and John tells him, "You've got to go find me when I'm a baby." He's like, "I'm not born yet, you know, in your timeline, but go find me when I'm a baby. Find, you know," he's like, "I was born in Tustin, California. You can go there and find out if I'm telling you the truth." And so presumably that's how Richard Alpert has always known when John comes to the island in the plane crash. That's how he always knew that John would be one of their leaders in the future. It's because of this event where John went back in time and told Widmore, or sorry, Widmore, he told Richard Alpert, "Go and find me when I'm born, and that'll prove to you that I'm telling you the truth." And so, of course, Richard, throughout his life, we know from other flashbacks, has kind of followed John and kind of monitored his progress and all that kind of thing. And it's really interesting to see. I mean, you look at the compass and all these other things. It's the same compass, by the way, or at least people have pointed out, they believe it's the same compass that Richard offered to the, whatever he's supposed to be, like 8 or, I can't remember if he's supposed to be like 8 or 9, something like that, that that Richard gave to the young John Locke, you know, when asking him to pick the items that were his, kind of testing John, that apparently that was the same compass as the one that Richard gave to John Locke when he mended his leg in the season 5 premiere. You know, anyway, Richard obviously follows John throughout his life and sort of monitors his progress and figures out what's going to ultimately happen to John. All right. Kate Jack says, I think it's odd that she named the baby Charlie, which is, you know, derivative of Charles. Donna Bohr says, lots of Charles names. Charlie, Charles Widmore, Charlotte, I guess. Yeah, that's a good point. And now a new Charlie. Let's see. And Freddie Mac, of course, points out in the chat that presumably the name is after our Charlie that is from the Flight 815. And that's, you know, I would definitely assume that. Dano at Large says, so what was it that spooked Richard Alpert after giving young Locke the test? Well, it was that he picked the knife, remember? He picked the knife over some of the other items, and Richard's like, no, that's not yours. Are you sure? Well, he says, are you sure you want to pick that? And then he kind of got all upset and went away. So I guess Richard, for some reason, doesn't like the fact that Locke likes knives. I don't know what the deal is with that, but let's see. Oh, and by the way, Big O, before he left, he said, for the record, I do think that Ellie is Ms. Hawking and Faraday's mom. Well, he says L, which I assume, yeah, I assume he means Ellie. From this episode. Okay, so now we've totally got to get into that. So the first thing that I've got under my screenshots and Easter eggs, really the only big item that I've got there is Ellie equals Eloise equals Ms. Hawking equals Daniel's mom. This is from loft.qubit.net, and that is Sludgeweb's Lost site. They've got an article there, which, of course, I'll link to on the blog when I post this episode. I'll put this in the show notes. They've got a comparison, and they kind of go through the sort of explanation of how Ellie, the girl on the island who is holding Daniel Faraday captive at gunpoint, whatever, turns out eventually to be Daniel's mom and therefore and is also Ms. Hawking. So... it's kind of an interesting idea. The names are obviously, you know, the same. We found out in a pop-up for the second episode of season 5 that Ms. Hawking's first name is Eloise, and we find out on this episode that this girl on the island's name is Ellie, and at the beginning of the episode, she acted like she had some sort of a previous connection with Dan, which... you know, may have just been sort of a misleading little, you know, clue, but it's. I think this is a really valid theory, and they've got a shot of them, of Ms. Hawking, Eloise Hawking, and Ellie, you know, side by side, and I think this is it. I think they totally nailed this. It's a great idea, and it certainly all fits together. When I was watching this episode, I totally didn't catch that this girl's name was Ellie. And so I'm glad that they kind of put the pieces together, but that certainly makes a lot of sense. Any thoughts on that from anybody else? What do you think about that, Spivvy? Oh, sorry. I guess Spivvy had to go and then came back into the chat. And anyway, so did you hear what I said? Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's. I mean, I definitely do think that I mean, Ellie will turn out to be Ms. Hawking, and his mom. But I mean, it's such a crazy connection, like you were talking about before, how he would name the rat after his mom, and I was thinking while you were talking about that how when Daniel,
whoops, did we lose you? Are you still there? Oh, I think he just got kicked out again. I don't know what's going on. TalkShoe must be having some problems tonight. So, let's see. Somebody in the chat, Dano at large, said the man behind Hanso, and I'm not sure who Dano was replying to, but I'm curious what that means. If they're talking, if he's talking about Charles Widmore, let's see here. I'm just kind of looking through the comments in the chat. Diesel929 says, "That's what I've been saying all night, that Ellie equals Eloise Hawking." So, yes, I know. Credit where it's due. Diesel929 also had the same idea, a.k.a. Paul, had that idea as well. Okay, so Dan Otlar says that he was talking about Widmore as being the man behind Hanso, the Hanso Foundation. And, yeah, I'm trying to think back whether the Hanso Foundation, well, let's see, one of the Hanso Foundation's projects was the Dharma Initiative. And there definitely have been connections between the Dharma Initiative and Widmore Industries. So, I believe that, yes, that is the case, that Charles Widmore is the man behind Hanso and Dharma and so forth. In fact, that's kind of an interesting idea. Maybe that was kind of part of the reason that Charles Widmore ended up defecting from the others. Maybe it's because he wanted to use the island for some other purpose. He wanted to use the island with, you know, the Dharma Initiative, for instance, to predict the end of the world using the numbers or whatever. And so because he wanted to use the island for something rather than, you know, do what the island's bidding was, maybe that's how he sort of lost his connection and his leadership role with the others. And that would certainly also make sense with things like the purge. You know, why did the others hate the Dharma Initiative? Why did they initiate the purge and kill all the people from the Dharma Initiative? Maybe that's why, because, you know, this is Charles Widmore. His group, they're invading the island, and they're basically sticking their business where it doesn't belong and trying to exploit the island rather than to do what the island wants to be done. So that's kind of an interesting idea. If Charles indeed was a leader to the others, that would certainly make sense as to what all transpired that caused him to leave his role. Let's see here. Maybe he was forced to use the wheel. Hanso and Widmore share a building per Bad Twin since Guest 18. Okay. And unfortunately, I've never read Bad Twin, so I'll take your word for it. Hanso and Widmore share a building. I do sort of seem to remember that listening to probably Lost Cast, I'm sure, was talking about that at some point. John Carter says, Alpert and Widmore clash. Widmore gets bounced. Dharma arrives. Alpert and co. become hostiles. Let's see. Dan at large says, my parting shot, and now there's an H-bomb buried on the island. God help us all. Good night. And let's see. Natalie in Seattle says, are the hostiles the Losties? Well, the people that are normally called hostiles on the show have been, I guess, the people that were, I guess, the others, really, because Desmond referred to the other people on the island who were not part of the Dharma Initiative experiment to be hostiles. He referred to them as hostiles. Let's see, the missing Tosas. Maybe Widmore exploited the island to get wealthy, and that's what led him to losing favor with the island. I can certainly see that being the case. Let's see, Guest 18 says, check Lostpedia, read their Lostpedia article for Hanso Foundation, and check the Bad Twin description. And Smoke Monster is the spirit, this is also from Guest 18, the Smoke Monster is the spirit of the buried H-bomb, which is trying to stick it to the man and find the voice of Geronimo Jackson. Bam, lost solved. John Carter says, Richard Alpert's camp was known as the hostiles in Ben's time on the island. Right, okay, that's true. So basically anybody who's associated with the Dharma Initiative has called the others or Richard Alpert's camp the hostiles, regardless of where we have been in time. That's where we've heard that term before. All right. So that's screenshots and Easter eggs. Oh, and so Ellie equals Eloise equals Ms. Hawking equals Daniel's mom. Okay. And so Big O is throwing it out there that maybe maybe that Ellie, the person on the island from this episode, was the same person as Emily Locke, which is, of course, Locke's mom. And I'll post a link to that picture in the show notes when I get around to posting this episode. And so you can compare the two and see what you think. It's definitely an interesting theory, but I don't believe it. Okay. I know. Diesel99 in the chat says, that theory makes no sense, Josh. And I agree. But I'm giving Big O the benefit of the doubt. I'll post it anyway. But I totally don't believe it. She would have to leave the island and then become a teenager. Yes, you're absolutely right. It makes no sense. But then again, you've got this whole time travel aspect to the show. So come on, give him the benefit of the doubt. I totally don't believe it at all, but just throwing it out there. Okay, so just light spoilers. I'll first talk about what we saw in the preview for next week. Unfortunately, I didn't see much. So anybody in the chat that's got any other things that they saw, just start writing out now the things that you saw in the preview for next week's episode, because chances are you probably saw something that I didn't see. Let's see. Natalie in Seattle says, by the way, before we get into spoilers, I'm wondering if ultimately the Losties are the hostiles trying to derail Dharma. Okay, so getting into preview for next week. So these are kind of somewhat spoilery things if you think that the preview is a spoiler of some kind. K-Jack says, I think I saw Charlotte, which certainly makes sense. Oh, and I forgot to mention, by the way, at the end of the episode, that Charlotte starts bleeding from the nose profusely. So that's really how the episode ends. And let's see, Diesel99 says Saeed is shooting a gun again, and that Aaron is threatened to be taken away from Kate. Okay, I had something about that in my notes, too. Eric, AERC in the chat says, I noticed they were sticking something for Locke to bite down on, so maybe they're doing something to him. I didn't notice that. I may have missed that. There was a whole bunch of... They're always such short, tiny little clips that it's easy to miss them. I wonder if Sawyer or the Losties are the Whispers trying to guide the Losties around, says Guest 18. Okay, getting back to other things from the preview, these are things that I've noticed. I only wrote down a couple of things that I happened to see and be able to take notes on. Let's see. So a lawyer is telling Kate something like, it's time to prepare yourself to accept the fact that Aaron cannot stay with you, or something to that effect. I didn't quite catch the end of that quote. But it's time to prepare yourself to accept the fact that Aaron cannot stay with you, or something like that. So the lawyer and Kate apparently are coming back next episode. On the other hand, we also know from past experience that a lot of times these previews don't really just show what's coming next week. Like the preview that was that we saw at the end of last week's episode, Desmond tells Penny that he's going back to the island. And obviously that didn't happen in this episode, so that must be coming in a future episode, perhaps next week. oh, man, Guest 18 is quite the comedian. Maybe Bei Ling is giving him, meaning Locke, a tattoo, and that's why he's got to bite down on something. Oh, boy. The Missing Toe also says, I missed the Locke biting down thing. Maybe he's getting a Juliet Byrne tattoo for violating some island rule, and that's when Guest 18 jumped in. Okay. The other thing that I've got in my notes for the preview is that Locke says to Sawyer, while they're still on the island, I have to make them come back, even if it kills me. So there, once again, there's sort of this foreshadowing that Locke is going to die, and maybe a slight hint that maybe Locke could come back alive again. Natalie in Seattle had to take off, but she had one more comment. Sawyer said, he saw Kate on the island. Interesting. I totally missed that too. Okay, well, I think it looks like that's pretty much about it from the chat as far as things that they noticed in the preview. Eric says, and Juliet, Miles, Daniel, and it seems like Charlotte are in a canoe, and Juliet is looking back at the island. Wow, okay, I missed that one too. Again, there were a lot of like really brief flashes like usual, and I probably missed a lot of these things. Diesel 929 says, I think it's the Zodiac. And yeah, that's the raft that they were all on when the island moved, and of course they were within the boundary of the island, and so that's how they got back to the island. But yes, yeah, so they still do, I guess. I don't know. Do they still have the Zodiac? Because that would be kind of weird because they don't. I don't know. This doesn't make any sense because like they teleport or whatever through time wearing their clothes. And which are objects that are not part of them, and yet other items and things, like it's like only if they're grabbing onto it does it go with them. Like Charlotte's hands were still tied, but like what about like all the stuff that was at the beach with them? You know, like anything that's around them doesn't seem to beam with them. So I don't know what the deal is, or whether the Zodiac really, this canoe, is going to be wherever they currently are in time. I guess we'll have to see. Eric says it has to be the canoe they took from one island to the other because they're in a line. Okay, so it's not the Zodiac then. Although, let's see here. K-Jack points out they did mention the Zodiac last week. That's true. Eric says there were four people and they were sitting in a line. Okay. Let's see. And I'm going to look up the name of next week's episode. The title for episode 4 is going to be The Little Prince. I have no idea what that means, and I'm not looking at any other spoilers for next week's episode on Spoiler 6, so that's where I got the name from. All right. And, of course, you can also find little brief spoilers, even on TV Guide's website. If you go and look up Lost in your local listings on TV Guide's website, then you can find the episode descriptions there too. Sometimes they're fairly spoilery, which is why I'm not reading episode descriptions anymore, because I like to be somewhat surprised. I like the little brief, you know, minor spoilers, like, and the things that they reveal on the official Lost podcast and so forth. But all right, anyway, I'm done. This episode has gone way too long. But thanks for everybody for sticking in there, hanging out in the chat, and a lot of really great, great comments. K-Jack has a question from about last week's show. What is it that Ben takes out of the vent in the hotel room? Let's see. Diesel, is that the answer? Antoine Saint-Exupéry book, Le Petit Prince. Little Prince is a terrific book about a boy from a dying planet who comes to Earth. Is that the book that... the thing that Ben pulled out of the vent. The missing toe just says Ben's item is still a mystery. Yeah, so I don't know. Sorry, I think the chat is a little bit lagging right now, but K-Jack says this was before he tells Jack they are leaving. And Hey Bulldog says, I thought the box from the vent had money and passport stuff, or assumed it was. All right, so that's the box. Anyway, thanks again to everybody for joining tonight. Be sure to tune in next week. We're going to do, of course, another live podcast right after the show airs. And, of course, be sure to check out the blog at thelostmeister.blogspot.com. And as of right now, I don't have my show notes posted there. I usually post them at the same time as the episode. This past week, I actually released two podcast episodes, which is why I was a little bit late. I posted about 24 hours ago, the last week's episode and the related show notes. So I'll try to get this week's out a little bit earlier because I know people appreciate that. So thanks again, everybody. Until next time, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.
please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is The Lost Meister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.